honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with one of the most youthful and energetic 96-year-olds you're going to find anywhere. You can find Walter Granger these days weaving his way through his native Kern County in California to raise support for a World War II veterans memorial that's going to be unveiled this coming November. You can find all that information online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. Back in 1944, he was just 17 when he said goodbye to his sweetheart Joan and enlisted in the Navy. Did you have any idea what you were getting into?
Not at all. Not at all. I actually had never talked with the brothers who were in the Navy. Never really talked with Harold in the Army. And the only thing we did believe that the war had to be just about over, because if you were watching at all, you could see that the Japanese were being driven out wherever they were. And but again, that wasn't central in your thinking, you know. It's just here we go, what can I do, where are they going to send me? And then to be kind of just put into the job that I ended up, I never was a boatsman. We never had a boat. I had friends who had a boat. We went out to Lake Ming and rode in the boat, that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, here I am with the responsibility of loading 2 to 3 dozen guys in a boat and taking them ashore. And with no preemptive training, you know, here you go. You learn. It was like learning how to drive without your mom or dad helping you, you know. It just rolled with the punches, and they send you out and expect you to know what you're doing. I was fortunate from the standpoint that as we were assigned after we became experts taking over Oahu, they figured we were ready to go and they needed help in the Philippines to finish off the Philippines. They loaded us up with gyrenes and sent us to the Philippines, and we were all ready to do our part. And we got to the Philippines and they said, well, we've got everything under control, so you need to refuel and restock, but we need you in Okinawa. And that's a long stretch from Philippines to Okinawa. So by the time we got there, they said, well, we've just about got this thing cinched, so just stand by. Now, they were still bombing at night, but Okinawa was taken over. There was no fighting on the island. It was one of those, you know, every place you berthed, whether it was Pearl Harbor or wherever, because we stopped at a lot of little islands for R&R, and you wanted to make sure, the captain made sure that he wasn't berthed next to a cruiser or a battleship or a aircraft carrier, because as much smoke as we put out, part of our job was to take the Higgins boats and smoke up the area and then try to get back to your ship. that was a challenge. And you knew that sticking up out of the smoke was a bunch of antennae. And so that's all the Japanese could see. So they would bomb that area. They didn't bomb in the daytime, but they still bombed at night into August. And then August the 15th, I was on duty, and they announced the war's over. Everybody yelled and cried and wondered if it really was. you know, throughout the world, just because somebody said the war is over, everybody didn't know that. And you hear the stories years and years later where they run across somebody and they're still fight the war because they had no idea it was over. I don't remember how long it was, but a few days later, there was this huge armada of our planes that flew over, headed for Tokyo Bay to sign the surrender. And we were all of us that signed up for the duration. One of the first things they asked you when you signed up was, now let's get this straight. Do you want to sign up for the regular Navy or do you want to sign up for the duration? Well, 99% of us said, well, the duration, because it didn't look like it was going to be more than a year or two. So you hear it over the loudspeaker, the war is over. So you know what that means. We're going home. Well, I went home a year later. Went home a year later.
And I want to hear what you did for that year, but I want to make sure I understand this clearly too, because I'm guessing, given the nature of what you did as a coxswain on a Higgins boat, an LCVP, what you were prepared to do at the Philippines and Okinawa was take trips to shore, maybe take troops to shore. If there had been an invasion of mainland Japan, do you think you would have been taking boats full of Marines ashore?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we were in that position as it ended up. And the one thing I wanted to mention, one of the things people don't understand about an invasion, you have a couple of dozen transport ships, all with Marines on them, ready to make a landing. You lower your boat, your Higgins boat, in the water, and most of them were the light. Higgins boat was made out of plywood with a tin covering for protection. And then they had the bigger ones that would carry more machinery and more men, but they were usually just for the machinery because they were bigger. And the job is to hold your boat next to the ship with a rope ladder that's dropped over, and the Marines have to come down fully loaded with all kinds of gear, stepping on other fingers and what have you. And the boat is up and down and up and down and in and out. And they get on the boat and you push off, and then you go out to a reconnoitering area and you go round and round and round and up and down and all around, and everybody's waiting for everybody to get lined up. And during that time, quite a few of the guys are at the gunwale throwing up over the edge. The smoke, the diesel smoke from the diesel engine, and the smell of the life jackets is just unbearable. And then you're there an endless time, round and round and up and down. And so there's a ton of them, the guys. And then you try to catch a wave like a surfer, so you'll get up to the beach. You've seen the pictures where they drop the front gate and the guys step off into 5-6 feet of water, fully loaded. And then many of the beaches, they've got all the metal spikes in the way that the Axis has put in the water to stop you. So it isn't getting the boat and go ashore. It's a lot more to that, and I'm not sure that everybody understands that. That's a huge problem. And then People who have never taken a small boat into the beach, then try to get out. You got to back out without broaching the boat, because once you start losing it, you're not going to turn around and drive this boat into the waves. So it's quite a talent to get that boat out straight without losing the boat.
And you said when you got news that the war was over, you thought, okay, we get to go home, but it was another year. So what were you doing for that year?
They decided that they needed somebody to take back some of the property that had been taken by the Japanese. You know, when the Japanese came down, the Japanese started in 1935 in Manchuria, coming down the Pacific, and they didn't come marching down 5 miles wide. They came down and hit the main seaports. And so then the object was to go backwards. So they directed us to go to Shanghai and pick up a load of Chinese troops and reoccupy. And by the time we got to, before we got to Shanghai, they redirected us to Hong Kong. So we went farther south and actually went to Kowloon, which is one of the islands there off of Hong Kong. We loaded up with Chinese troops and then hit the major cities, ports, all the way up to Peking and dropped off a few soldiers at each spot to move in and tell the people, yes, it's true, the war's over. And when we finished that, we went back to Okinawa and loaded up with Gyrenes and took them to Korea, dropped them off at Incheon. And that was an interesting deal that nobody told us. I don't think we should have known. The tide was a 20-foot tide. Ooh. And some of the guys who didn't follow orders real well left their boats and went ashore and stayed ashore. And when they came back, their boats were mudded in, immovable until the tide came back in. So that was an interesting experience for them. And after that, then we unloaded them at Korea, and we were directed to Nagoya, Japan, and we picked up a load of Marines who had occupied southern Japan and took them home to Bremerton, Washington, where our ship was decommissioned and we were given our discharge. And the last people we saw as we went out the last hallway was a big sign, re-enlist. And they said, here we go, come on over here, fellas. It was like a hawker at a carnival. This is the place to sign up. And we all just kind of laughed and went off, and I hitchhiked home, and that was it.
You taught here in Kern County at Shafter High and North High for 3.5 decades. Like I said, a lot of your former teachers or former students are listening, I'm sure. You got to enjoy 68 years of marriage with Joan and raise your family. And now here you are, 96, and you've already told us all the stuff you're working on. Maybe you get asked this a lot. What's your secret? Because it says you're 96, but it doesn't seem like you're acting 96.
Well, I'm a lucky guy. I have good genes. Mom and Dad were healthy. They only lived to 87, but they were healthy. If you have a bride like I did, and you have a daughter like I do, and you work a lot, and you go to church every Sunday, I'm a lucky guy.
Well, and you're building something pretty special right now in the Kern County World War II Veterans Memorial. I don't want to forget to ask you, though, about your trip to Washington, D.C. with Honor Flight Kern County to see the National World War II Memorial and other sites that I'm sure were meaningful to you. Was there something in that experience, that journey with fellow veterans and volunteers, that was most meaningful to you?
Well, it was just one tearjerker after the next. I was fortunate. The fifth grade at Thorner Elementary collected the money, cookie sales, and the parents and the kids of the whole school put $1,500 together to pay my way. Oh, I had a fabulous weekend. Every place we went, there was hundreds and thousands of people yelling and screaming congratulations, and kids who could hardly walk, to people with canes.
What did you think about at that memorial when you looked at that wall of gold stars that represents over 400,000 Americans in World War II who didn't get to come home?
When they tell you how many that represents, it really brings it home. It isn't just a number. I mean, it's a field. What are they, 6-8 feet high for a half an acre out there? And that's why we're trying to have some, we're having some stars at the top of each of the black granite slabs. There's going to be a medallion for each service. And in the center of that medallion is going to be a gold star. So we want to pick up the same feeling.
And I promised you I was going to ask you this, because this memorial will be unveiled on Veterans Day, November 11th, as long as people get it done and you still need some money to finish it. And I hope people listening will chip in, and they can look at hometownheroesradio.com for a link to how to do that. A year from now, 10 years from now, 50 years from now, when someone comes through Bakersfield and they drive down the Avenue of Heroes and they come to this Kern County World War II Veterans Memorial, what do you want them to experience? What do you want them to come away with?
I want them to have the feeling that they're very fortunate that all this had to happen. It had to happen because we had to protect our freedom. We had to go. We've never gone somewhere to conquer. We've only gone there to keep people from coming here to conquer us. We've always gone to help somebody else who's trying to be conquered. And to recognize the fact that just from Kern County, the 684, that included one woman, and the one woman was married to another person who was killed. They weren't together. They were in different places, but they were man and wife. And the fact that it could happen again, particularly if we don't straighten out and realize what a democracy is and how it can work. Everything is so politicized, it's just criminal.
So I just have one more question for you. If there's anything else that you want to add, feel free. And I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country in World War II. And thank you for the way you're serving your community and your fellow veterans now. I know a lot of people are touched by that. When you think back over everything that's happened in your 96 years, and I realize you're still looking forward, especially to November 11th and the unveiling of this monument, but when you look back over your life, is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
Family, my family. My family, that's been my life. I'm just one lucky guy.
Walter Granger, 96 years young. And isn't it clear that part of what keeps him so young is the purpose that propels him? I'm going to say it one last time. If you would like to support his efforts and help make this unique World War II Veterans Memorial in Bakersfield, California, reach completion in time for Veterans Day this November, go over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. You're also going to find some photos and a short video with Mr. Granger there, as well as the extended podcast version of this episode with a few more of Mr. Granger's thoughts that wouldn't quite fit into our radio time. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.